I'm State Representative Marcus Riccelli from the 3rd District in Spokane, Position 1. I'm running for re-election because I think I should be rehired. I take this as a job interview, and I think that delivered on promises to Spokane to help improve opportunities for all folks, make sure that every kid and every family has a shot to thrive. We've been really successful. I prime sponsored the WSU Medical School bill. I've helped bring a transportation package that gets us an excellent rate of return on our tax dollars and over $1 billion in investments in our community. I serve on the Capital Budget Committee, where we've also made significant investments in local community projects that I've spearheaded. And for me, I just want, regardless of the zip code a child is born in, to give them a shot to thrive in our communities. And I'm raising my family right here, and I work at Chaz Health part-time as a project manager, and I'm very into healthcare policy. I think everybody has a right to affordable, accessible healthcare.
So you also, the one you left out was something we covered this year, and that was to bring healthcare to Marshall Islands population here. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was quite a journey, and understanding and my passion for making sure that everybody has a right to affordable, accessible, quality healthcare, and that we can't expect our children to do well in schools, our families to thrive if they don't have roofs over their head, if they don't have access to healthcare, and if they don't have food in their stomach. And this is a basic tenet of hierarchy of needs that we need to make sure in Spokane. And I'm pleased to have worked with that community who really brought that and that passion to show that they could organize and get this done. And it was a very exciting opportunity for me to be a part of and help engage on.
So where did that attitude toward, you know, don't leave anybody behind come from in your life?
Honestly, I'm a Spokane kid. It's kind of the attitude in Spokane, partially from my parents and how they raised me, but also my Jesuit education at Gonzaga really instilled in me that value of service to others, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, not to get too into the weeds, but to make sure that that we're taking care of the most vulnerable. It all kind of came together. But really, it was a huge influence in my education at Gonzaga University. I went to business school to make as much money as possible, and the Jesuits instilled in me that value of service to others, the ethics, the philosophy, tenets, and it really molded who I am as a legislator and quite frankly, as a person.
So I ran across you when I was working at WSU until a year ago when you were working on the WSU Medical School project. How did you make that case, especially when it was a case that really wasn't a partisan one?
Right. Well, we made the case because we need more providers in our community. We just, on this side of the state and throughout our community, we don't have enough folks that are providing access to healthcare, and we need more doctors. We also need more nurse practitioners, more PAs, phlebotomists, et cetera. But looking at the need, there's really it was a push for a new model as well to make sure that we're going out in those rural communities. People say, well, why do you care in Spokane about the rural communities around you? You represent an urban district. Well, I know if those communities around Spokane don't have access to health care, then they dry up. And quite frankly, a lot of that economic dollars come into Spokane around those communities. So I want to make sure that everybody has access to health care. And I worked with an unlikely partner in Senator Baumgartner. It was one of the most interesting experiences of my legislative career. I had a lot of Democrats within my own caucus, you know, trying to halt it. It was a real dance of legislation, but it shows what we can do in this community when we come together. And I think to this day, that bill that I worked on had one of the highest number of co-sponsors ever. And that was just me, you know, shoe leather, talking to my colleagues and making the case. I was working with both sides of the aisle, but I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. We were able to do that legislative piece of it. This community spent a decade preparing to move a medical school forward. And I'm looking to the future, biomedical research, getting those graduates options for student loan repayment so they can stay in these communities, et cetera. I'm very excited.
So I'm interested in the working across the aisle thing, because I was like you. I thought it was an interesting combination between you and the senator. So how does that work? You talked about one of the more interesting experiences. How so?
Well, let me start by saying it's not too often. It's a great story, actually, and one that I'm looking forward to telling for many years future, in the future, because I was on my way back from Olympia was one of those rare occasions I left on a Thursday. We had a Friday transportation committee canceled. And about Moses Lake, I started getting calls. And the appropriations chair at that time, Ross Hunter, I was getting word that he was going to hang a $30 million amendment to my policy bill, which was frustrating. One, he didn't reach out to me. So I got home, surprised the kids. I'm here early, excited to be home, and then decided Friday morning I was going to hop on a plane, go back to that appropriations committee, and work my Democrat and Republican colleagues to beat an amendment back, which in our day and age, defeating an amendment that's being proposed by the chair of the appropriations committee is pretty rare. And so how I did that is I worked my Democrat colleagues individually, and I got the Republican House members to lock up. And quite frankly, he just didn't have the votes, and we moved out of committee. And it was one of those moments where you see an angle and you got to go for it. And I thought, if you're going to do this to this policy bill that's great for our community, you're going to have to do it right in front of my face as I sit, you know, two rows back in the committee and watch everybody take the votes.
So how does that work on other bills? I mean, this one worked because I think everybody's working for Spokane. Does that work on other issues, other bills?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a controversial bill right now that we passed last session to expand our commission to 5 county commissioners. I teamed up with Representative Holy, Representative Volz, Representative Shea, Representative Ormsby in the House side, unlikely partnerships because we think it brings better representation to Spokane, that we are far past with a county of nearly half a million people that should only have 3 people representing them. And I was fundamentally opposed to the district primaries and countywide generals. I think people who are outside the district have no say in their primary. I think that is against their rights, their voting rights, and fundamentally disenfranchises them.
So remind us how that's going to work in the future now.
Well, in 2022, there'll be an election by district. There'll be a bipartisan local redistricting commission that will draw up the lines, and that's what we'd like. Currently, Commissioner French is attempting to get the Association of Washington Counties to sue over the bill, as well as put some money in from Spokane County. I think it's a frivolous lawsuit. I think it's a threat to his power. I think we're by far at a place where we need to move to 5 county commissioners for better government and better representation. And it was a bipartisan bill with unlikely folks working together. But we've shown it time and time and again, the transportation package. Prior to passing the transportation package, we got 80 cents back for every dollar that we put in projects. After we worked together as a community and as legislators, we got $1.30 back for every dollar we put in, over $1 billion in Spokane County. And largely that's because we put Spokane first. House Democrats, my mantra personally is to just put people first, and we all win when we do that over politics.
So let's go back to healthcare, because sure, there are a lot of your colleagues who would like to bring a single payer system mm-hmm. to Washington. What do you think of the chances of that happening?
I think it's a difficult road. I've been supporting a public option. I also personally support a move to single payer. We spend way too much money in healthcare, and I think a move to single payer is the right move, but I think that there's some intermittent steps if we can't get that huge bite at once, and I've been right on the ground floor working on those. We passed a bill this last session work to use what we offer on state plans and try and leverage that for people on the exchange. I 100% agree. Those folks between 138% and 200% of the federal poverty level we need to make it more affordable for co-payments and for premiums. So I wholeheartedly support a move to single payer, but I also think if we can't take that whole bite, that there's moves that we can make to put us on that path. I hope we can all agree, though, that we need to make sure that everybody has access to affordable, quality health care. And, I get concerned when I turn on the nightly news and I see all this, commercials telling me what to do about health care. You know, I want to have a relationship with my provider. I want to be able to afford. I don't think all that money that goes into marketing is something that is frivolous and a waste of dollars. So there's a lot of waste in the system, and I think we can do a much better job.
Okay, so if you get elected, what are your top few priorities for 2019?
Well, I intend to remain very active in the healthcare policy arena. I think we've banked our future in Spokane on the healthcare sector economically. I also think that, we talk about education a lot. Well, kids are not going to thrive if they are hungry, homeless, or don't have health care. So I'm going to spend a lot of time there. We have an obesity and diabetes epidemic. I'm interested in bringing nutrition back to our public schools with scratch and modified scratch cooking. I'm interested in moving to learn, making sure kids are getting PE. In a district like the 3rd District that is economically challenged, a lot of the kids that go to school don't have opportunities to do after-school sports, et cetera. We need to make sure that we're moving towards the healthiest next generation. That's a huge focus for me. I'm interested as a transportation committee member in a potential of another revenue package for projects that could continue to build upon the work that we already have here. We do have need. One of the needs that's not super exciting to folks because people like to stand in front of shiny new projects is we have a huge backlog in just basic maintenance on our infrastructure that we need to take care of to make sure that we can get products to market. I'm interested in that. I've had a particular interest. I created a dental infrastructure package to provide people oral health access. It was a $15 million package. Creating more dental visits, over 60,000 new dental visits. I think all health begins with oral health, and we need to do a better job. And then particularly one of my interests around behavioral health is putting using telehealth to provide behavioral health access in our schools, getting more nurses in schools, mental health counselors, et cetera. So those are some of the priorities I'm working on, I'm engaged in. And I'm really excited to do this job. I think if folks look at my record or go to my website, marcusricelli.com, they'll see that I deserve to be sent back there.
Talked about mental health.
Yeah.
Does the state need to spend a lot more money on mental health, or does it just need some sort of change in the system? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, one of the big changes in the system and in our responsibility as a state is to make work this integration of behavioral health and into our system and make sure that we're not cutting off the head from the rest of the body, basically. We have to treat this the whole person. And to think that we can put mental health in a silo is, I think we've all agreed, is wrong. I've also been very pleased. One of the most bipartisan things that I think we've been able to accomplish in Olympia is to work on mental health access and understanding the stigma associated and making sure more people are getting treatment. Between that and our opioid crisis, I think we have a lot on our hands, but we need to come together. It's not just about dollars. It's about being smarter about how we coordinate the systems.
I think the governor has talked about having more smaller community-based mental health treatment throughout the community. Is that something you support?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that we also need to provide the infrastructure as well for not only outpatient but inpatient care throughout our state, provide folks opportunities and the beds that are needed when people are in crisis. And we also have to back that up by making sure that we have enough of the folks going into these professions. I do serve on our state's telehealth collaborative. I don't think it's a silver bullet to solve all of our behavioral health problems, but I think behavioral health and mental health, there's a unique opportunity. We can do telehealth access right to people's mobile phones. People who are, for whatever reason, transportation's a barrier. Maybe they are having concerns with going out in the public. They can have that care delivered right to their home. So I think we're the Microsoft state. We need to move forward with aggressive telehealth policies to expand our mental health access.
So Washington taxpayers are going to pay more property taxes in order to help pay for public schools. Are you happy with that? Are you happy with the package of trying to improve public schools that was passed in 2018?
Well, I think we funded McCleary again from the 3rd District perspective. Meeting those law requirements of McCleary do not meet the requirements of the wraparound services that people and kids need to thrive. We need to make sure that we have adequate housing, and that's a focus of mine. I was able to pass, after decades of work, the Source of Income Discrimination Bill to make sure that people are not being discriminated against that are on vouchers, et cetera. Make sure that.
How did that work? Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. So, we had our landlords and our housing advocates that were really locked in a pretty tough battle. On one hand, you had the housing advocates say people are being discriminated against. They're not being rented to because they're on Section 8, they're on veterans vouchers, et cetera. On the other hand, you had landlords saying, hey, we rent to some of these folks, and they, sometimes our properties are being damaged and maybe higher than average. I don't necessarily believe that, but what I told the landlords and when I brought folks together is we'll create a capital mitigation account because we want you to rent to folks on these vouchers. We want people to have access to housing. And for me, that capital mitigation account really unlocked a lot of battle, and we got people in a room, and that would say up to $4,000 or $5,000 if somebody damages your place, you can apply to Commerce and be refunded. And it was, you know, I worked with Representative Barkas, who's a landlord himself in his day job on the west side, and we really brought folks together who hadn't been in a room in a long time, and I'm very proud of that.
Okay. We're about 16 minutes in. Were there any issues that I missed that you wanted to raise, that you wanted to talk about? Things that you're hearing from the community?
Well, I think I absolutely think housing and homelessness is a top priority and something that I'll be focused on for this community and statewide. We talked about mental health. We can't get through moving forward talking about upcoming legislative sessions without talking about climate change and the environment. This is my platform. Climate change is real. Let's address it. Let's be aggressive about addressing it here in Washington State for the sake of my kids, your kids, your grandchildren, your neighbors. We need to leave this environment better than we have it. And so I'm very interested in working on moving policy forward on climate. I think, again, housing, affordable housing particularly, and homelessness is a huge issue. I do think that we need to have an open, honest discussion about common sense gun reform. And I think that there's some opportunities there. I'm pleased what we've done, particularly in the last year, though, when we were under both the Senate and House was under Democrat control, from education to eliminating a lot of the wait lists for the state need grant to voter access, reproductive parity, rural jobs. Down the line, I think that we had a successful session, and I'm looking forward to being returned with the will of the voters, and excited to do this job. And I honestly am just inspired by this community and what they're able to come together. And it's not about me coming up with ideas. A lot of what I get to do is the community coming up with ideas, and I get to go be an advocate. And I got to tell you, I think I have a reputation for being a hard charger for Spokane and making sure that we're getting, you know, promises delivered on major initiatives and projects here in this community.
Okay, we'll finish with the final one. You talked about climate change. Does that include taxes somewhere along the line?
Well, first, we need to actually work on conservation. But when we talk about what's going on with wildfires, et cetera, addressing climate change, I think, is fundamental. And we need to make sure DNR is funded well. But I'm not sure exactly what the policy moving forward is, but I do think that we need to have some aggressive policy steps forward and put all options on the table and have a robust discussion. Absolutely.